And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Quimry. The Chilkat River has been nominated by an environmental nonprofit as one of 10 most endangered rivers in the country. KHNS's Alonda Premenil has more.
Every year for the last 40 years, the nonprofit American Rivers has issued a list of the country's 10 most endangered rivers. David Morick is a director at American Rivers. He explained the logic behind the designations.
It's a combination of the actual threat to the river, the importance of the river from a state, regional, or national perspective, and also often we'll take into account whether or not the threats facing that river are facing other rivers. Is it emblematic of a larger issue? But also making sure that there is a decision point that's happening this year that the public can engage in to make a difference for those rivers.
The threats are varied. Number one on the list of endangered rivers is the Colorado, threatened by climate change and water management policies that suck the river dry, according to the environmental organization. The Pearl River in Mississippi is number three. The group says it is threatened by a real estate development plan that would dredge and dam it. The Clark Fork River in Montana is number five. Previous industrial development has left it polluted with dioxins and heavy metals, and a cleanup still needs to happen, American River says. Coming at number eight is the Chilkat-Klehini River system. Morick cites mining as the biggest threat facing the river, specifically the Palmer Project, which is a proposed copper-silver-zinc mine near the headwaters.
We're really concerned about potentially contaminated wastewater discharges.
While mining has historically taken place in the Chilkat Valley watershed, the scale is not comparable. The next phase of the Palmer Project is to drill a mile-long exploratory tunnel under a glacier. This would displace large amounts of material and create copious water discharges. Haines resident Gershon Cohen is project director at Alaska Clean Water Advocacy. He was instrumental in getting the Chilkat on the national list. He says the discharge will be too close to important streams.
The area where they will be discharging, their estimate is 350,000 gallons a day of what will be a contaminated discharge, contaminated with heavy metals, with explosives residues, with hydrocarbons from the drilling process and all the vehicle equipment. That discharge is going to be literally adjacent to Glacier Creek, the second largest producing coho stream in Southeast Alaska.
The American Rivers website encourages the public to send a letter to Congress about the river. The aim is to force the mining company to obtain a stringent surface water discharge permit. Federal standards would apply. Currently, the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation requires a groundwater discharge permit. Cohen says this is not enough.
Chances are very high that that discharge is going to make its way to the river, which means that according to federal law, they're supposed to get a surface water discharge permit. A groundwater discharge permit, as they are now getting from DEC, does not require you to meet water quality standards. It has very little, if any, monitoring and enforcement. It's a very different permit than the federal permit, and we want DEC to do their job.
In a press release from American Rivers, Chilkat Indian Village President Kimberly Strong is quoted as saying, "Our ability to live off the land and continue to harvest the wild stocks of salmon, to hunt the bear, and gather the berries that grow in our traditional territory sustains us today as it has since time immemorial. The natural riches of these lands and water have allowed our people not only to survive, but to thrive for untold generations. Endangering the Chilkat River ecosystem with a hard rock mine will have devastating effects on our tribal people that rely on the Chilkat River and Chilkat Valley as our sustainable food source." American Pacific Mining, who operates the Palmer Project, did not answer a request for comments. For KHNS, I'm Alan DePremenil.
The Bristol Bay Native Corporation wants to bolster its cultural heritage program with a focus on language revitalization. KDLG's Christina McDermott has more.
Bristol Bay's native languages are thousands of years old. The Bristol Bay Native Corporation's cultural heritage program director, Kalar Simblair, says that languages hold and carry cultural knowledge through generations.
And so you have 10,000 years worth of knowledge, you know, multiple generations that go from astronomy to, you know, ecology, you know, interactions between people and spirituality.
Larson Blair spoke at the Bristol Bay Sustainability Summit last month in Dillingham. She said that BBNC's Education Foundation plans to focus on the intersection between education and culture. The Cultural Heritage Program will help them to do so.
This commitment will put into action that the foundation will not only work in but value our cultural ways of knowing, doing, and being at the same time as our Western focus with the scholarships.
Language revitalization is a central part of that commitment. So far, several communities, including Igiogic, Pedro Bay, and Manicotic, have received money from the program's Cultural Heritage Grant to fund language workshops, immersion programs, and short-term community lessons in local native languages. But language revitalization remains a primary concern for most of the corporation's member tribes. Language revitalization requires fluent educators and the opportunity to integrate the language into everyday life. But for many native languages, there are comparatively few fluent speakers in the region. Typical classroom settings, the most common way to learn languages, can cost thousands of dollars, and learning in class doesn't always translate well into practice. Larson Blair says Western-style classes can also require students to take on a mental load.
Getting graded to take your own class and getting, you know, a low grade in it, it's not going to feel great. There's not a lot of flexibility with the classes.
Of course, classes aren't the only way to learn. Along with funding community efforts, BBNC hopes to establish apprenticeship programs and language immersion schools. Larson Blair says it's another way to help train a generation of fluent educators.
That, you know, someday we have an immersion school for Aleutic, Yupik, and Dene'ina where kids can go learn English, math, science, and get a degree, but do it in their own language.
She says this isn't out of reach.
Language revitalization just takes one person that's really motivated and really cares. And we have so many people in our region that are so excited about language. And we have speakers that are still here. And so it's something that's doable. It's something that, you know, if we come together, this is like really something we can make happen.
Aside from planning for the long term, BBNC also offers immersive culture summer camps with language learning. Camps are scheduled on Iliamna Lake for this summer. Chukko Yukomi, Christina McDermott, Dahonga.
Denali National Park will be radio collaring grizzly bears this spring as part of a project to assess impacts of park road traffic on the animals. KUAC's Dan Bross spoke with wildlife biologist Pat Owen.
Owen says the plan is to radio collar and track the movements of about 18 bears, roughly split between areas east and west of the pass.
That will give us a really good idea of how much effect traffic is having and ultimately give us some insight as to, you know, the current traffic levels on the road, you know, whether those are appropriate.
Owen says they will dart bears from a helicopter, then land to collar them. The operation areas, including portions of the park road, will be closed to visitor foot and bicycle traffic starting on the east side of the pass May 15th through the 19th.
The May area will start at the Teklinika Bridge and include all of the backcountry units on either side of the road all the way out to the top of Polychrome Pass. And then in June, we'll do basically the same thing all over again, starting on the 2nd of June, and we'll be catching bears from the 2nd through the 6th, and that closure we'll start pretty much just east of the slide at Polychrome there, and we'll extend west, just short of the Wonder Lake area.
Owen says it takes several hours for the bears to wake up from the tranquilizer drug, and the closures are there for safety reasons.
I don't want someone tripping over a recently immobilized bear if it's recovering out on the landscape. It's not safe for people. It's not safe for the bears.
Owen says the park has conducted bear research using radio collars in the past and that it is stressful for the animals, but she emphasizes the value of the resulting data in fulfilling the agency's responsibility to both protect wildlife and provide visitor access.
You know, I feel really good about the work that we're doing out there and what we're learning, and I think it's well worth it.
Owen says the radio collars will be replaced with ones with fresh batteries in 2025, and those collars will be programmed to automatically fall off the bears in 2026 in Fairbanks. I'm Dan Bross.
You're listening to KTOO.